You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast for Wednesday, June 3rd, 2009. This is episode 74, Fry Your Pickles, Back Up Your Data. It is time again for the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology and hopefully its usefulness in the ministry of our listeners. Welcome back, everybody. Thank you for joining us one more time for, this is what, show 74. Welcome back, Sally, as well. Hi, Sally.
Good morning, Martin. Nice to be on the air on June 3rd when I'm actually recording early. And this will be
don't tell anybody. You're going to be in Branson, correct?
That's right. We'll be enjoying Branson and on our way to Mississippi for some good old southern fried catfish and fried dill pickles.
So. Okay. So we're actually recording this real early, like the week before. So if late-breaking news comes in, we'll have to catch it the next show. The next show we're going to do at our regularly scheduled time or close to it when you'll be on the road. So that'll be a unique experience.
Yeah, we're crossing our fingers on that one, but we'll have some Mississippi podcasting going on in a week or so.
They have internet down there?
I think they do.
Also joining us again is Rob Benson from our own Synod Administration Building. Good morning, Rob.
Thanks for having me.
He was on, I don't know what show it was, we'd have to look back in the archives of how long it was that Rob joined us. He talked about security at that point. We are going to talk about another topic that is near and dear to Rob's heart. Right, Rob?
In a way.
And that is backups. We had announced this theme or topic last week and said not the sexiest of topics, but Rob, it's something you deal with every day, right?
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of recovery.
And why is that?
Well, basically, we have a lot of files that come up missing, and they need to be recovered. We have a lot of systems, actually, that need to be backed up. Mm-hmm. Backup technologies are constantly changing, so we're constantly readdressing how we back things up and what
I
the best
assume
way to
data is growing, right?
Data is growing exponentially.
And it's in all different kinds of formats. It's in databases, it's in emails, it's in file folders, it's everywhere. So we back it all up.
Yep.
And if somebody loses something, usually through, let's be careful here. Usually through some kind of mistake.
I'm not pointing fingers.
It needs to come back. So that's one reason for backup. But a backup is a universal issue and something that I think probably our users don't think at least top of mind about a lot. But today is backup day. So let's talk about some of the reasons why you would want to back up.
Well, I think first and foremost is there are mission critical files that you don't want to lose. And, you know, given everybody in our audience has different perspectives on what might be mission critical, you know, it could be church files, membership data, confirmation information, that kind of thing that you've stored electronically. It could be your personal photo library that I think there's a really funny commercial now where the parents are trying to recreate the baby pictures because they lost them all, you know, and there was no backup, you know.
That's
so
right.
Just kind of put on whatever hat you normally wear and think about what you'd do if you lost that data. And you know, for business purposes, obviously, for personal reasons as well, you want to protect your data.
And most of our stuff now is in digital format right out of the box. So it's, again, when we sit down at our desk in the morning, we begin to create digital files. And when we create digital files, those need to be backed up. I know, Rob, one thing you spend a lot of time dealing with is email. And I would think that cloud-type solutions, one of the plus sides of cloud-type solutions for email is that somebody is backing up your stuff for you.
In a cloud solution, depending on the solution,
right.
Yes.
I'm thinking things like Gmail and those
right.
kinds of things.
Yeah, and they are, but they don't make any guarantees of what the reliability of that backup is or that, indeed, they can get it back.
Mm-hmm.
Important emails I often forward to an account that I have control over, so I've got a backup copy of it.
Good idea. You can also use, as far as Gmail is concerned, you can use Google Gears and get that stuff down on your machine. So there really are two copies that you can locate at any one time.
Yeah. Google's actually first-class outfit. I really I like their email system.
Right. Although Google has had, or Gmail has had, some outages lately.
Yeah.
Some fairly public ones. And I think more and more people are relying on their cloud mail as opposed to anything else. And when Google goes down, email stops, right?
Yeah, actually, we ran into a couple problems with Google Mail a couple months back, if mm-hmm. you recall, where they were having delivery problems.
Right.
That was a nightmare.
Right. So I think it's probably universally agreed on that you need to back up, but one of the reasons that I believe people don't is it's so hard. You know, you have to remember, it's not a flashy thing. It's just very utilitarian, and there have been so many different kinds of solutions over the years. I think that's changing now a little bit, isn't it?
I think the new solutions are a lot easier. I mean, if you look at a Max Time Machine, that's just really awesome. I mean, it's just going on in the background. You don't even know. Most of the USB hard drive manufacturers have really great backup software, either automated or the one-touch backups.
Right. Yep, I had noted one-touch. I've never actually used one, but I assume that installs a little client on your machine that is essentially the interface between your operating system and this device, and it's just it just does it.
Yeah, so it just basically reads the button press if it is the one-touch software, or else it schedules it.
Mm-hmm. Now, time capsule or time machine works the same way. You set it and forget it, essentially.
Yes, you
it
do.
Should work that way, right?
It tends to work that way, yes.
Mm-hmm. Is that what you use at home?
I actually manually back up at home. I don't use time machine because I don't actually have the storage to use time machine on my machines.
Okay. Storage is getting cheaper, though, and that is an option with a lot of the external hard drives out there. You can get, you know, at least I was looking the other day, I think you can get like a terabyte and a half for about $150, $140, a terabyte for $100 or less. So there's really no reason not to do it, and there's all kinds of free utilities that'll get your stuff from your operating system or from your machine onto these external drives, right?
Oh, yeah. It's just amazing how inexpensive storage is now.
Mm-hmm. A couple of the ones that I'm familiar with, we've recommended this on the show before, is SyncToy 2. That's a Microsoft-compatible product. And maybe we should talk a little bit about the difference between syncing and backing up. The way I understand it, and at least in my own mind, is syncing is a copy for copy, a mirror. So you've got one copy on the machine that you're working on, and then you have an identical copy on the backup device, whatever it is. And whenever you change one, the other changes. Now, that's good because you always have two copies, but there's probably some danger in just relying just on sync, right?
Yes, because you could save your mistake.
Right.
Right.
So if you accidentally delete something, it may be deleted on the other side. Or if a file gets corrupted, it's going to copy that, right?
Right, exactly. That corruption will be carried over.
Okay.
That's the unfortunate part of syncing.
Yep. Although SyncToy has a couple of different modes that you can use, and I forget what they're all called. One is Echo, and there's a couple of Contribute, so that it won't copy. It'll just copy new files and keep the old, even if you delete them, so it acts more like a true backup.
Like an incremental.
Right, an incremental. But the downside of that is it doesn't do any compression. So that can get pretty large, you know, on the backup drive. Then you have tools like Acronis, True Image. You have on the Mac Super Duper. You have all kinds of ghosting technologies. Anything that, Rob, you would look at and say, "Hey, this is This is rock solid.
I really, you know how I love free stuff. Mm-hmm. I do things like Mirai's hard drive cloner. Ranish's partition manager has a cloning capability. On the Mac, there's Carbon Copy Cloner, which is
right.
donation.
That works a lot like Super Duper.
All of these are really, they're all pretty solid, mm-hmm. but you have to use them.
Right. And almost all of them now, speaking of ease of use, is there's a scheduler tool, right?
Right.
Where you can go in and say, I want to back up this set of data or all data at this particular time, either once a day or once a week or once a month, or even set up incrementals along the way.
Correct.
So if somebody's thinking of backing up their stuff, what kind of schedule should they use?
Well, it really depends on the data. I'm a big fan of taking things and breaking down into the things I really need, and then the things I want, and then the things that would be nice, but I could live without.
Right.
And then you decide, hey, how far back mm-hmm. could I lose this and be happy with it?
Right.
Your working data, I would say, should be backed up nightly, at least. Mm-hmm. On our Kinect
installation. If you're an active user, I mean, if you're doing things every day, right?
Right. Yeah. Our Kinect system's actually backed up twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
So it really depends on the importance of the data. Photos, I like to actually back up. I probably back it up once a week, but I will actually, I'll put it in a lockbox at the bank probably once every 6 months or so.
Is that via a DVD or an external hard drive or what?
Just a little USB drive.
Okay, that's an option. And they're getting bigger now. I think you can get up to, 32 gigs, I've seen them now. Are they bigger than that?
Yeah, either? mine's a little 4 gigger, but you can get them huge now.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, the first thing that people run in to get in a fire is your home photos.
Right.
So really being serious about backing that up, I mean, think about it. Now, like my kids' photos, everything from birth is digital.
Right.
So if I lost that in a fire or something else, that would be catastrophic. We'd lose years.
Is there concern with some of these external devices, whether they be a DVD or a USB drive, about those deteriorating and losing data? So you don't have a backup of the backup, so to speak.
The DVDs and CD-ROMs have been disappointing, actually, in their ability to hold data. I found they're pretty good if you lock them in a dark dank corner and mm-hmm. put them away somewhere safe. But if you're just putting them in the discs that you flip through, I found that even a couple years later, they can start failing.
Why is that? Just the wear and tear on the surface, or is it light? Is it temperature shifts?
There's a little
magnetics?
Bit of each. There are some theories that the CDs aren't being made up to spec, actually.
Okay. Well, that's not unusual. We're always looking for the cheapest cheapest CDs, too.
Right, exactly. And if you aren't using the finest quality CDs, they might fail in the future on you. And then, of course, they get scratched up in transit. If they're in with a bunch of other discs, you tend to put them on a spindle and spin them around a bit. Well, if that's important data, you don't want to do that.
Right. I suppose any drive could fail. An external drive could fail as well, and your data could be, your backup could be lost there. So that probably suggests that that's not enough, that you not only need the files on your operating system, if you do storage there, and the external backup, but you need some kind of off-site backup, like you mentioned. But now there's all kinds of online storage tools that are fairly reasonable that will back up your backup.
Right. Years ago, we used to use the Yahoo briefcase. And, now that's kind of gone to the wayside.
Yeah, you're showing your age, too.
I know.
A couple that we've recommended on the show before, Mosey is one. There, I think you get 2 gigs free. If you have more than 2 gigs of storage, I think there's about $4.95 a month for unlimited storage. The downside with some of those is they take a long time to do the initial backup, especially if you have a lot of data. The good news is you set it once and it just happens, as long as you have internet connectivity. So
right, and with everything, if it's personal and private data, make sure you read that agreement.
Who owns the data?
That's the security part of you coming out, right?
Exactly, yep. Carbonite is another one. They don't have a free component. It's $50 a year, but they kind of do the same thing. They're a competitor to Mosey, as well as a product called iDrive. They do have a 2 gig free service as well. Then you can go up to 150 gigs if you have if you subscribe to their $50 a year plan. There are also some free ones out there that are appealing. Sally, you use SkyDrive, right?
That's right, Martin. You recommended that one before, and I gave it a try. Their product is called Gladinet, and they give you 25 gig of free storage. Mm-hmm. And it's just another map drive on my computer. So I drag things over to the Z drive, and and it's out in the cloud.
Yeah, that's a Microsoft. Microsoft makes SkyDrive. Gladinet's kind of an extension that sits on top of that that gives you that file folder that you can drag stuff in. The only thing I have found, and it's 25 gig limit, so that's a lot of storage. It's unless you've got a lot of video and stuff like that. The bad thing about SkyDrive is that you have a physical limitation on the size of the file. I think it's 50 megs. So if you have anything above 50 megs, you're going to be out of luck with SkyDrive. Live Mesh is another one. That's a Microsoft product similar to SkyDrive, except it's a 5 gig limit. The nice thing about Live Mesh is it does automatic syncing, but not just syncing to the cloud, but syncing to any other computer on the mesh. So really, it's computer-to-computer backups. If you've got multiple computers, that may be an option too. Then you don't have to worry about your online storage, as long as you have enough storage on the meshed computer, so to speak. Others are Dropbox. Sal, you've experimented with Gmail Drive or no?
Yeah, actually, I just read a tweet from Jason Schmidt who was looking at Gmail Drive. I'm sorry, I guess it is Gmail Drive. I was thinking it was G Drive.
Right.
And
there is a G Drive as well, I think.
That's basically capitalizing on Gmail gives you 7 gig of storage, so you can use some of that storage space, not for storing email, but actually for storing your regular files. And there's a little utility to install to do that.
Right. Rob, you have other suggestions there on the offsite backup, in the offsite backup arena?
No, actually, I do a mesh type of thing at home as well. All my computers have the same set of photos on them.
So you're good unless the house burns down.
Yeah, then I'll have to go to my backup. I got to go run to the bank and pick up that one.
That's probably a great strategy. Now, there's a whole new crop of storage devices coming out there that are making life even easier for homes that are networked, like network attached storage and things like Drobo. Can you talk a little bit about those?
Well, I'm currently in love with the Drobo, but the Drobo is actually a newer type of device that is it uses a newer RAID technology that allows it to be a little bit more flexible in how you store drives. You can make the drives of varying sizes. You can plug them in hot, which means you can plug it in while the drive's on.
Right. It's kind of it's using a RAID technology, right?
It's using a RAID-like technology.
Yeah, explain a little bit to our listeners what RAID is.
RAID is a redundant array of independent disks. Basically, it's a
or
bunch
inexpensive
of disks.
Disks,
yeah,
right?
Or inexpensive,
cheap stuff,
depending
right?
on when you were going to school.
That's right. Did I just show my age?
Well, it's okay. basically, it combines several drives to provide the ability to store more than the one single drive, or allows one drive to fail with and then the others can take
some
over
redundancy.
For it. Right.
Right. So it depends on which RAID. If it's RAID 0, I think you call that scary RAID, where you're using every single megabyte or every bit
you're going
is
for
available for usage.
Right.
But
However,
when you get to RAID 5 or 10, that's where you get the redundancy, where you
right.
can lose a disk.
But you lose
storage.
You
space.
Lose storage space.
Right. And that's the way Drobo works, where you throw in, I think the Drobo unit that you've been playing with has 10 disks you can throw in there?
It has eight.
Eight disks.
Yes.
Okay. And it can go up to whatever size disk you can throw in there, right?
Correct.
Okay.
It's 16 terabytes total, and we've got 12 terabytes
available.
Usable storage.
Right.
So, it's insane.
And you could actually be writing to the Drobo unit, pull a drive out, and you wouldn't lose any data. That's the way that I understand how that works.
That is correct.
At least that's what they say.
Yes.
Okay.
So. I haven't tested that theory yet.
All right. So Drobo is not cheap, but it depends on your storage needs, too. And if you're putting this on a network, which you can, I believe, then it may make some sense for file sharing and storage for a church or school.
Right. And different models have different abilities as far as the network goes. Mm-hmm. The regular Drobo doesn't actually come with any networking capabilities right. whatsoever unless you put the...
But you could throw it on like a Linksys router that supports USB...
Right, or it also has its own. It also has its own Drobo dock that will have that.
Oh, okay.
That has that capability as well.
Okay.
But the Pro has that built in.
Okay, like Airport Extremes now have the ability to plug in, external storage,
I love those
and they
things.
Just sit right on your network and just looks like a regular, drive.
Yeah, NAS drives have come down. Network attached storage drives have just come down in price so amazingly. I think less than $200.
Right.
For a terabyte of storage.
So it probably doesn't make sense in a school or church setting if you've got a network or multiple computers that you need to back up to have an external drive attached directly to a computer. Throw it on the network, map a drive, and then use one of these software packages to back up the data.
Right. I mean, if you're in a small environment where you don't really have a domain-based network,
right.
this is a great way to make sure your data is backed up
mm-hmm.
and also centralize everything.
Right. Okay. Sally,
you guys are true geeks. I'm amazed.
Bring us down, Sally.
Bring
us down off the
well,
geek ledge.
Here you go. Bring you back to reality. In 1995, I worked for a company, and we bought a computer with a 25 gig hard drive. It was actually a whole disk array. We were so cutting edge, and it cost $150,000 for 25 gig. It
holy cow. You can get that on a thumb drive now.
Exactly.
For
can
50
you imagine
bucks.
The exponential growth of storage? It's really something, really amazing.
It is astounding. I remember when we were wondering what we were going to do with a Meg. On our Commodores, what are we going to do with all that?
That's right. And now with audio and video and all the images, the 8-megapixel cameras that we've got, it can fill up pretty quick.
That's the big challenge now. Video is huge. Video and audio are huge, and we're using up lots and lots of storage. And it's difficult to find solutions that are inexpensive, or at least in a small, medium business range that can handle that.
Right.
That Drobo is pretty awesome for that. But,
right. Yep. I guess one, in kind of closing down the conversation here on backups, one of the keys, probably a step before you actually go through the whole backup process, is to kind of organize or keep things tidy enough so that you're not backing up unnecessarily. Or if you're using any of these offsite or in the cloud type storage things where you're paying for it, why back up things that you don't use or need? So some would kind of throw the whole kitchen sink at the backup strategy and say, I'm going to back up everything. And there's probably a place for that because I think you do. I know my Mac at home, I use Super Duper, which creates an image, mm-hmm. which I could actually boot from if my computer, if my computer's hard drive died. So I think there's validity in there. But for most of us, backing up what's in your documents folder and be religious about where you store stuff, it makes it a lot easier on the backup side.
Oh, definitely. It goes down to, if your computer broke today, what do you really need?
Right. Yep. Sally, do we forget anything?
Well, you know what, guys? Your audio totally cut out on me for about 30 seconds there. So I'm thinking you covered it all.
Okay.
You guys did great.
We did.
We didn't cover tapes, but I don't really think that needs to be covered too heavily.
Yeah, I think in most environments, at least for our listeners, that's not something that they really need to be involved with, especially with the inexpensive nature of backup devices today.
Yeah, I think in the long term, you're going to start seeing a decline in tapes just due to the expense and unreliability of
it. Well, and this is a pain in the neck to restore, right?
Yes, it is.
It's linear. You got to find the spot on the tape to get everything back.
And cross your fingers.
Right.
And it takes a long time, too.
Yep. We still kind of do that as our last line of defense in the Senate Administration Building so that we do a tape backup.
Yeah, if you deleted it 3 months ago, I will go to a tape backup. But if you deleted it last week, it's on disk.
Yeah. How far back do we go here in our office?
A year.
Okay. So anything a year back we've got.
Right. And we do keep some checkpoints further than that. I've got checkpoints that are about 3 years back, but that's sketchy if you're looking for something specific.
Right. Very good. Rob, thank you.
Well, thank
you. Appreciate your time, and we'll let you go back to work. All right. Thanks, Rob.
Thanks.
All right, Sally. Great stuff. I think we made a rather boring topic, at least semi-exciting, hopefully.
Oh.
So, at least I was
very
excited.
Very glamorous.
Maybe that's the geek in me.
That has to build the show notes. You made it very extensive. Very good stuff.
For those of you who don't know, Sally's in charge of the show notes, and you probably could have guessed that because of the quality that you see on wellstech.wells.net. But she does a great job.
This one will be a challenge for me.
Yeah, okay. Well, every once in a while. We'll keep it simple next week. How about that?
All right. How about for that?
All right. New technology showcase. What is hot? What's new? What's exciting in, again, the technology field?
Well, again, given the context that we're recording this show a little bit early, we just read yesterday about Skype releasing a new beta version of their internet protocol for telephone, video conferencing, and now for screen sharing. So started it with an early morning for both you and I, Martin, and we downloaded Skype 4.1 beta, and I was able to actually see your computer screen through Skype.
Yeah.
It was just pretty seamless experience for us. It went real well, and I could definitely see ministry applications for this. A free way to communicate voice, video, and now to be able to share your screen. So if you're teaching a remote Bible information class, for instance, you can actually bring up a presentation on your computer, and the person you're in a Skype call with can see that presentation and follow it along with you in real time. So real exciting step forward for Skype.
Yeah, it's not new technology. Live Messenger has been able to do this for a little bit, but Skype offers obviously some advantages in just the rock-solid voice over IP technology that we actually use to record this show. And even though we blanked out on you for 30 seconds there,
right.
We'll blame that on your internet connection or ours.
That's probably a sleepy eye thing, yeah.
But Skype is I think, a growing tool that I think is going to begin to be more and more useful in a lot of different contexts, and I think this is just the next step. So, yeah, it worked really well. It was just a button press, and I could go full screen, or I could even segment off a portion of my screen that I wanted to share. Just drag a square around the area, and that's all that you were able to see. So I think they've done a nice job.
So we documented the experience, took a few screenshots, and put together a special page on the Wells Tech site that we'll have a link to in the show notes.
Very good. And it's free to try, so you lose nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And this is I think it's Windows only at this point. I don't think the Mac version has the screen sharing capability yet. That usually is a second phase for a lot of the Skype technologies.
Yeah,
one thing Go ahead.
Read up on that one. Actually, I think somewhere I read that maybe the Mac version had it first.
Oh, really?
So, yeah, I think that's what I read. So we'll see.
Well, I should have done my homework.
Yeah.
One thing that Skype, I think, needs to do to really compete with some of the enterprise-level tools is video conferencing for more than two people.
Mm-hmm.
Some of the tools like Live Meeting and those kinds of things support multiple video windows, and Skype is still only one-to-one at this point. So.
Yeah, and actually the screen sharing is one-to-one as well.
Right, so that's right.
You can't share with multiple people your screen either.
Mm-hmm. All right, shall we go on to our picks of the week?
I'm ready. I'm excited about my pick this week. It comes from the Languages blog, which is an education-oriented blog that I read on a regular basis. It's done by a lady named Sylvia Tolisano, and Sylvia's put together an extensive list of web-based activities and resources for elementary school students. And I'm just so excited to dig in and check out all these different elementary learning sites. She has them categorized. There's simulation sites, drawing, creativity, digital storytelling, programming, typing programs, games, social studies, geography, and the list just goes on and on. And for my kids here at St. John's and Sleepy Eye, when I work with them in the computer lab setting, we do it via a page on our own St. John's Sleepy Eye website called Wacky Wonderful Websites. That's just what I've named it for the kids. And I'm just really excited to rework that, add some new things for them over the summer, and then actually keep some of these good ideas in the background so that I can add them throughout the year, because they are always just like little sponges, ready to check out some new things and learn new things on the web. And so Sylvia's put together a great list, and I'm definitely going to be taking advantage of some of the resources she shared there.
That's the beautiful thing about the web, is that you can actually leverage the great work that's been done in you know, wherever around the world. And the challenge is finding it, and that's one reason that we do this show, is to try and ferret out some of that stuff and highlight it for you, especially if you are a teacher. This sounds like a great resource.
Yeah, that's the fun part. I start my day with reading my RSS feeds and looking for things that I can share with folks.
Cool, cool.
Yeah.
My pick is a browser, and we've mentioned it, I think, on the show before. I don't think it's ever been a pick, but it's the Google browser. Google seems to be doing everything these days, but one thing that they're doing really well, at least in my opinion, is their Chrome browser. They're up to version 3. The beta was just launched for version 3. Well, Google's always in beta, but version 3 of the beta was launched. And significant speed increase, at least from my anecdotal testing. Pretty rock solid. They're going to be adding some extensions to it, like Firefox, which has been one of the downfalls of it. It does all the bookmarking. It's elegant, it's fast, it's stable, and I would highly recommend it to anybody looking to get a little bit more speed out of their browsing experience. It uses technology based on WebKit, and that speeds up the JavaScript rendering, which is a thing that slows a lot of web pages down. Most web pages use JavaScript these days. But Google has figured out a way how to optimize that, and they've done a nice job with their browser. They kind of do some funky things with their tab browsing, but in general, I think it's a very usable browser. I was kind of looking for something along these lines because I've been doing a little bit more work on my netbook. I have the HP MiniNote 2133, which does not have the fastest processor. It has a small hard drive, so I was looking for something that would load quickly. And this is the perfect fit for that because it's lightweight and it loads pages faster than Internet Explorer or Firefox. So it's kind of the perfect fit, especially for the lower-powered netbook that I have here. So if you haven't tried it, it's free to try. It has tab browsing, as I mentioned. It has what they call application shortcuts, where you can actually make a web page an application so it appears as an app on your desktop or within your menuing system. You can drag tabs around. One nice feature that they've implemented here is what they call crash control. So each separate window is its own instance of the browser. It takes up a little bit more memory, not a lot, but if an app crashes, which they often do on the web, these Web 2.0 apps will crash your browser. It doesn't crash it only crashes that window. It doesn't crash the entire browser. So you can continue working on, you know, with your other pages and just reload that one. It has safe browsing. It has bookmarking. They've done a nice job. So that is Google Chrome.
Well, you answered my question as to why I might want to switch. What I heard was speed, and it reminded me of Top Gun, if you have the need for speed. So
the need for speed, yes.
The way to go.
I would assume the other browsers are going to catch up. They're all working at improving that, and the rendering engine that Google's using is obviously available to others. It's open source stuff, but right now I think they have the winner's flag in their camp right now for speed. So give it a shot. Doesn't hurt to try. I typically have 3 or 4 browsers installed on my machine at any one time, more for testing than anything else. But I'm browser agnostic at this point.
Okay.
For whatever the tool is.
All right.
What do we want to promo this week, Sally?
Actually, we have an event for you to mark on your calendar coming up on June 20th, and they have a rain date of June 21st. It will be the Soul Ride. I love that name.
Soul Ride.
Soul Ride. It's a motorcycle ride sponsored by Wells Lutheran for Life Metro Milwaukee chapter. So if you're in the Milwaukee area and you have a bike and you want to join in, they're going to start at Salem Lutheran Church on 107th Street in Milwaukee and end up at Sam's Club.
Stomping grounds. I bet I know why that's where it starts, because Pastor Dan Simons there is a bike rider.
Oh, well, there you go. So they're planning a scenic ride north into the Holy Hill Kettle Moraine area. Cost is $25 per rider, obviously benefiting Wells Lutheran for Life, but the riders all get a T-shirt and a picnic at the end of the ride. So
awesome.
Sounds like a great way to support healthy choices for the abortion-minded clients that they're seeing there at Wells Lutheran for Life in Metro Milwaukee.
Great, great cause. Mm-hmm. Sally, you ever ridden a bike?
I had as a child. My brother had a motorcycle, but that was many, many years ago. So yeah. What about you? Are you
a biker? Never. Never. I'd like to if my wife would let me. But she hasn't
She's
yet.
She's the wise one in the family.
That's right. All right. Well, yeah, I live in Harley country at this point, so it's probably something that needs to get on my to-do list.
Yeah. Our kids just recently made a class trip to Milwaukee, and that was one of their stops, was the Harley plant in Milwaukee, and took the tour.
Oh, that sounds like I have not been there either. That needs to get on my list, too.
Yeah, they had a really good time there. It was very cool.
Good. Community feedback. What do we have from our loyal listeners?
Well, actually, we're going to start with a disclaimer today.
Yep.
We have just discovered that we may have lost some Wells Tech email, unfortunately. Our
not
email
that it wasn't backed up, mind you.
Yeah. Actually, our email services have been kind of reconfigured a bit. We're taking our @SAB email to @wells.net email, getting rid of that SAB acronym in our email addresses. And in the course of doing that, our regular @wells.net email addresses got reconfigured. And unfortunately, the WellsTech @wells.net email address didn't get reconfigured exactly correctly. So, mail was going through but being delivered to no one. And so if you emailed us in the last couple of weeks, we may not have received your message.
It's not that we're ignoring you.
No, we really want to hear from you, and you're welcome to test out the system now and give us another email at wellstech@wells.net, and hopefully it's all resolved now and we're going to be getting those messages correctly.
Yep. But we did hear from a number of people, so let's go through those at least.
That's right. Last week we talked about classroom streaming video, and we heard from Perry Lund, just a little bit of positive feedback about the options that we presented in that show. He just, having a wife who's working in a public school setting, really commented on the fact that it's nice to have alternatives, because so often teachers may just want to use YouTube as just the easy way to go and no preparation or anything, you know, and make kind of come across some objectionable content by selecting YouTube. And so he just was really, you know, happy to see some alternatives discussed for educational video. So we appreciate Perry letting us know that. And I actually had a follow-up on that topic as well. And I wanted to include a link in our community feedback area to TeacherTube, my site, which is a new feature that was announced from TeacherTube. That was one of the things we talked about last week as being a YouTube alternative with a lot of education videos for free. And now you can actually set up a My Site and have up to 20 contributors from your school for $99 a year. And you can customize it. You can put your school or whatever logo on it. There's no advertising involved. You can moderate it, and you can also set up privacy levels, so you can kind of lock away some of your videos for specific users instead of making them completely public. So if you're looking to build a video platform in an education setting, TeacherTube's My Site may be worth considering.
Mm-hmm. Very good.
So Yeah. Shifting gears a bit, we also heard from Pastor Jeremiah Gum, who's at Cross of Christ in Liverpool, New York. And he sent us a really cool blog post, Martin. I'm not sure if you had a chance to read this one, but the title of it was pretty engaging. It's called Nobody Cares About Your Website. And basically what he was saying was that a lot of the content from your website can be syndicated now to a Facebook page or to Twitter or whatever, so that the content is what really matters. But the website is kind of falling by the wayside. Not as many website-specific visitors, but instead people are engaging via Facebook or other social media where the content is being delivered. So interesting food for thought.
Content is king. So if you're not putting out good stuff, or if you're not putting out anything, like sometimes our churches fall into that trap where they put a lot of energy at the starting line, but when they get halfway through the race, they kind of let their web presence lay fallow and no new stuff goes up there. That's the kiss of death.
That's right. This was on an interesting blog. I did a little digging around once I landed on this web page. It's called Media Salt. It says God isn't bland and the church shouldn't be either.
I like that.
Yeah, I like that a lot. And they actually had a sidebar link to another blog, Midnight Oil Productions, where they were talking about a Twitter sermon series being done down in Texas. So I'll include a link to that one, too. Maybe interesting for some of our listeners to explore what this particular church in Texas was advocating in terms of sharing your faith via social networks, basically.
Very good.
Yeah, good stuff there. I also wanted to include a link here in the community feedback section for Dan Lorman's blog. Dan joined us a couple of weeks ago talking about virtual integrity or showing your faith online. And he has a blog called Faithfully Online, and he actually highlighted his podcast interview on his own blog and actually gave us a really nice shout out, Martin. Highlighted several of our recent shows and that kind of thing. So we appreciate that from Dan and wanted to make sure we had a reciprocal link
nice.
In our community feedback area.
And we, of course, appreciate Dan coming on the show, taking some time out of a busy public official's schedule.
Absolutely. He was awesome. Had a question from Kelly Hewitt. He's one of our coworkers at the Senate Administration Building, and he was telling me that his sister recently got a smart board, but she's not really gotten any training on the smart board. So mm-hmm. he was looking for avenues, you know, to direct her. And there's lots and lots of great opportunities online. And I just wanted to include the links that I shared with Kelly in our community feedback area as well. Smart Board has great free training resources on their website. It's actually smarttech.com. And there's a couple of blogs that I regularly read that have information about smart boards. One's called Talking Smart Boards and Much More. And the other is Teachers Love Smart Boards. And then finally, there's actually an online learning site. They've taken Moodle, the online learning software, and set up a specific training site for smart board users. And they have loads of video and things. It is fee-based. They have some free things to get you started, but most of their content is locked away and you have to, you know, pay for their coursework. But if you're in a remote location where you can't get to some face-to-face smart board training, this might be a good alternative for you. So we'll have those links.
Yep.
And then finally, we heard from our friend John Simonson, and he was pointing us to a new, or maybe not so new, but a really good Common Craft video called Google Docs in Plain English. Google Docs is Google's online office suite, basically. And what John said was this video does a good job of showing how Google Docs collaboration could help church committees share and work together on documents and spreadsheets. So if you're looking for a solution, you don't want to have to email out a document to 10 different people and then, you know, collaborate, pull together all of their edits to different documents. Being able to put the documents online and edit in this way is really a good solution for church committees. So I thought that was really insightful of John to share that with us, and we want to have that link in the show notes as well.
Awesome. Thanks, John. We've talked about Google Docs in the past, and I've been in the midst of a rather large project on a collaboration on a Google Doc. I was doing a consulting visit to Martin Luther College with with Tom Hausman, who now works at Viterbo College, or University, I think it is, in La Crosse. He used to be at Wisconsin Lutheran College, and together we did an engagement up there, and we're doing the report, the analysis report that we're going to give back to Martin Luther College, all in Google Docs, and significant edits, re-edits. We could both be in the document at the same time. Boy, I don't know how we would have done this if we didn't have that kind of technology at our disposal. It would have taken us three times as long, where I'd have to be doing edits, and I'd send it back, and then he'd do edits and then send it back. And this is just so much easier for any kind of collaborative work that you would need to do, or just document sharing. It beats sending it in an email. So.
And what about the stability, Martin? Did you have any crashes or any problems along
the
way?
Very, very solid.
Awesome.
No issues at all. So.
Very good.
All right. I think that's it for community feedback. Yes?
Yeah, I think we're done.
Okay. Next week, Sally, you will be on the road. So we're going to do a computing on the road segment. What's
that's
in your
right.
bag? What are you going to all take along?
I'm going to take notes as I pack.
So. That's right. So we're going to talk about, you know, what you should maybe take in your bag, all the things that you maybe can't live without if you're working or on vacation or whatever it is. Just our thoughts on how you do mobile computing, basically, if you want to stay connected while on the road. So tune in next week. I will be here in Milwaukee, and Sally will be in beautiful Mississippi.
That's right. I might have some fried dill pickles on the side while we're podcasting.
Fried dill pickles. I've never heard of that.
Oh, it's the best.
Is that specific to Mississippi?
I think it's pretty much across the South. It goes well with catfish. Yeah, wherever you're at a catfish restaurant, you can get some fried dill pickles.
Well, I don't like catfish, so maybe that's why I've not heard of fried pickles.
Martin.
All right, so you got to tune in next week with that promo, that teaser. So
there you go.
Let's close the show as we always do with a Wells featured musician. This week it is Kevin Lersch. He is going to be singing for us that Christian classic Amazing Grace from his album Abide With Me. Thanks everybody for joining us. We will talk to you next week. Promise.